You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey everybody, it's Ken Davenport, and I wanted to say thank you for listening to the Producer's Perspective podcast. You're now listening to a special mini-series, the Producer's Perspective podcast, live from the pandemic. These are recordings directly from the Facebook Live series I started during the coronavirus pandemic, where every single night I interviewed a Broadway luminary and chatted about what they were going through, how they were dealing with it, and what they expected Broadway and theater to look like when it was all over. So join us for this very special episode of the Producer's Perspective podcast, live from the pandemic.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Please welcome to the live stream, Ms. Jen Colella. Welcome, Jen.
What's up?
How are you?
I'm all right, man.
So I want to talk a little bit about your path to Broadway and how you got where you are, especially because I was just doing a little research about you today and Googling around and, of course, fell onto your Wikipedia page. And I don't know if you know this. Do you know that, like, where they list you as, like, what you do? Do you know what the first thing you're listed as?
I do not.
Comedian.
I love it.
I would like you to tell us some jokes right now.
So, okay, cool. I only have dirty jokes, so get ready. No, I was a stand-up comedian in Los Angeles. I was a regular at the Laugh Factory and the Comedy Store for a little bit before I came to New York. So I think that might be where Wikipedia got that from.
So that's fascinating. So did you enjoy it? This is one of the toughest, I believe, of all the types of performing there is.
You're not wrong.
The hardest.
You're not wrong. Okay, so when I was up there and doing my thing, I really enjoyed it because it's very empowering to trust myself, to trust my own jokes, to trust my own delivery. If an audience laughs, it's not because I told someone else's joke well. This is all me, and it's a very fulfilling feeling. On the flip side of that, I've also learned that I can fail miserably on stage and have no one else to blame. No writer, no pianist that messed up my rhythms. No, there's no one to blame. It's all me, and I have failed miserably. And I learned that I can get the audience back in the next breath, in the next line, that the world doesn't stop revolving just because I've stumbled. And it's helped me with my courageousness on stage to learn that there's nothing that could go so terribly wrong in an audition or on stage or in the rehearsal room that I won't be able to recover from. So that was very valuable.
It feels like doing a song or a dance number that you like know exactly where you're supposed to be or what you're supposed to do would be easy compared to like getting on stage in front of an audience that's right like this far, sucking down drinks and yelling.
Yeah, man. And they did heckle. Oh, it was wild. It was wild. You know what else was tough about it, Ken, was, and this was a while ago, so I bet things have changed a bit, but a lot of the comics were kind of dark and a little sad, and they didn't have the most respect for themselves and each other, and that's just not my, that's not my jam. It really is not, that wasn't my group of people, so waiting for my set was difficult because I was around a lot of people who were just kind of
chain-smoking.
Oh my gosh, and talking trash about their colleagues and themselves, and it is everything I'm not about. So,
well, at least that stand-up comedy, like the wait for your set thing, pays really, really well. When you're going to 8 shows a night.
Yeah, dude. I was like, yeah. So saved up a lot of money from that. No, I really, it's the courageousness. It helped me hone. If I do concerts now, I don't have to write a lot of patter to connect my songs and to weave a show together because I really feel comfortable with a live group of audience, a live audience, and I like to help that group of people feel like we're in a living room together and we're going to share this experience together. And I definitely attribute that to my time on stage as a comedian.
What, did you work music into it? Would you sing as well? Was that, that
sometimes cool? As a character, I should have done more of that in hindsight.
Don't worry, you made the right decision.
Okay, thanks, man.
Leave me stand up behind.
Okay, right on. God, thank you.
Damn it, if only I was still doing bringer shows where I had to like fill an audience and get them to drink two drinks.
People ask if I do you do stand up now? I'm like, not my life. No way, Jose. I'm not doing it.
So your first show on Broadway was Urban Cowboy, yes?
It was, yes.
And tell me what that was. It was somewhat of an infamous show, which, by the way, I very much enjoyed, and you were fantastic, of
Thank
course.
Thank you, brother.
What you know, it obviously didn't go so well in terms of commercial success, but, it got you here, and...
Well, here's the beautiful thing. The difference between my side of the table and your side of the table is that I have to treat everything that I'm a part of as a hit. And I believe in it wholeheartedly. I'm not looking to see, oh, is this something that's going to strike? Is this, if I'm asked to do it and I jump into a project, I honestly don't care if it's a hit or not. In my heart it is. It's something that needs to be done. It's something I believe in. So I would like to have done it longer. And I would like for my investors and the people who put that money energy in there to have recouped, definitely. But as an actor, my job is to believe in it wholeheartedly, do the best I can for as long as we have the fortune to be on stage. And that's what we did. We had a blast. It was one of the best experiences of my entire life.
Really?
Oh my gosh. I got to sing and dance and fight and ride a mechanical bull. I mean, it was incredible. And some of my best friends in the world are from that production. I FaceTimed with Lonnie Price today for an hour. He's one of my best friends. He was the director. Marcus Chait came to see my show in San Francisco a couple months ago. And that experience was only fantastic for me. It was my introduction into New York, and I could not be happier that it was.
You talk about this, and it's so true that, like, I find that out of every experience I have, even the ones that do not work out, there's always something good that comes of it, always. It's a great reminder to me to just do things that I love, because even if they fail, which is other people's words, not my own, something good's going to happen. I'm going to meet the right person. Something I'm going to be changed.
Absolutely. And believing that is a practice.
Yeah.
If you keep believing that wherever you, if your heart has led you somewhere, that's exactly where you're supposed to be. And so there's, of course, there's something good in it because you're there, because that's what is. and believing that where you are is exactly where you're meant to be is a practice.
So you've originated a bunch of roles now. You originated that role. You
all of them on Broadway, isn't it? And that's, yeah.
I mean, that's a very rare thing. It's amazing. And obviously writers trust you to create a character where none existed before. What's your process when working on something original?
Well, first of all, it is my favorite part about being New York is that there's always something being created, right? And exactly what you said, when creators trust me with their baby, with something they've been working on for years sometimes, it is the greatest honor. There's nothing better. They're handing me a piece of themselves and trusting me to do my best to help it move into the world. I could cry. There's nothing sweeter. There's nothing sweeter. So I love being in the rehearsal room. I love rehearsing much more than I love performing. I love to perform because of the energy that I get back from the audience, but being in a rehearsal room is by far my favorite place in the world to be. Because I can stumble and learn and come in prepared and be a good leader with my energy and my attitude and my positivity and flirt and mess up and do all the things and be safe and create a family, that to me is the gold in what we do. It's the best part of it. I'm prepared, man. There's no way I'm going to come in and I know we're working on a scene and be like, oh, I haven't really looked at it. Like, that's not my jam. My whole jam is don't worry over here. Got it. I'm not your trouble person. I'm only going to be prepared and ready for whatever you need. And I take great pride in that.
It's amazing. So I'm going to flip it now. And Drew asked a question here. You've created many new roles, like we just talked about. Is there a classic role you've always wanted to play?
Great question, Drew. You know, there is. I would like to play Bobby and Company. Hmm. And I would like to play, and I think this is down the road for me, but it's going to happen, Mama Rose, because she's so loud. And I've made a whole career out of singing like it's the last time I'm ever going to sing, right? So I'm excited about that one. There's another one. Oh, I think Diana in Next to Normal.
I think
that'd be a good one because it's rock and she's a little nuts. That feels like a good fit. I'm open to absolutely anything. I will try to use my own life experience to fit into anything, but those three are the ones that popped into my head.
What about, do you write as well? Do you write music or are you a writer?
My songs are ridiculous. My songs are like, you're in the kitchen and you're looking cute. You know what I mean? Like, I wrote a happy birthday song with a bunch of curse words in it that I'll do on Cameo sometimes. But my stuff is not serious. No, it's not. My songs are ridiculous. Like late night, I know like three chords and it's about how cute my girlfriend is. Like that's about all.
They're like stand-up comedy songs. It sounds.
Yeah.
So Come From Away, let's just talk about this amazing piece of theater, which is one of the most joyous experiences I've had in the theater in a long time. And that's what I love about the show, because of course everyone, including Sue and Randy, your producers on my podcast, were like, we're great before it opened. Everyone's calling it the 9/11 musical. We don't know what we're doing, but like we're doing this thing because it's amazing. And of course, that was everyone's question. Like, how could something about 9/11 be so joyous? Mm-hmm. How could it be? And then, of course, you go and you're just blown away by the love on stage. But I want to talk about the process. Were there times throughout it where you were like, well, we're not there yet? Like, how much did it change from the first time you were involved, from the first moment to the end?
Well, I have to be honest. When I first read it, I wasn't sure. I was like, it's a lot of direct address. We're talking to them a lot. You know, like I wasn't sure. And then the 9/11 thing, and I was like, ugh, my goodness. And then when they asked me to sing Captain Bass, I was like, she says in the song she's 51. There's no way I could play 51. I was just totally like, there she is.
Look at her.
Oh my goodness, just singing like she's never gonna sing again.
Which I love. I mean, it does such a great like a reviewer should write that about you. It's like every time I've seen you perform, I've been like, she is singing like she's going tomorrow. It's just amazing.
I'm so full out. I have to learn how to, even in rehearsal, I got to tell you, it's people laugh at me because they're like, are you going to do it full out? Because I don't know how else to do it, man.
They're like all these people, like we're just marking and things out there.
I'm marking. I'm sure it would behoove me to learn how to mark a bit to like save it, but I don't know what I'm saving it for. I'm like, it's now. Anyway, I wasn't sure how it was gonna go. And then we had our first preview audience in La Jolla, and Ken, they laughed at all the, we thought it was funny, we thought it was moving, but you know, it's not until you share it with that vibration with other people, with an audience who hasn't been in the room with you, and ask them what they think, and their response was so overwhelming. We were blown away, and that's when I was like, oh, we have something here. And then we had the joy of moving from La Jolla to Seattle to DC. We got to continue to work on it and let these very smart audiences tell us what was working and what wasn't. And we kept retooling. It was genius the way they did it. I thought our producers were so smart to do that. We had kind of a little tour before we came into New York. And so we were as ready as we possibly could have been, which I think is a great reason for the success of the show, why it's so tight.
Yeah, and there was such a buzz building. It was a brilliant piece of producing, because they took a subject that they thought people might, this could never be a musical. By the time it got to New York, people were hearing, oh, not only is this a musical, it's one that you have to see. Mm-hmm. So I respect Sue and Randy so much.
I do too.
Did you ever fall off the bowl in Urban Cowboy?
No. Dude, no.
No,
I did not. That was another area in which I happened to excel. I was very adept on that bowl. It felt quite natural to me. We had bowl practice. We went to a bar in Jersey and practiced on a bowl there before we got the bowl for our set. And I had a lot of time to practice. We were in Coconut Grove. Remember that awesome theater when it used to be in Florida? So never fell off the bowl. Some of the boys did. Not me.
Not you. Not you. Tell us a little bit about this one-woman show. Was this the first time you did it in San Francisco?
Yes. You know what? I don't know how it happened. My sweet musical director from Come From Away, Chris Ranney, there were a couple of little things where people were like, can you just put together some songs and have an evening? And so I started doing that for various events. And then I got a gig in Alaska through his girlfriend, who was our fiddle player, Caitlin Warbelow. And so I had a whole band. I had all these charts, just songs that I like to sing. And we kind of made this show up. And then, yeah, Feinstein's in San Francisco asked if I wanted to come. So I was like, absolutely, we're building this show right now. And that one was just me and Chris. And it was delightful. I've always been a little nervous to do a cabaret because there's so many of them in New York, and I want to make sure that it's something special if I'm going to make people come out. Like, I want to have a reason to bring them out, you know? And I had a blast, and I think I found a groove with this particular show. So it was, I'm excited to share it again.
What's next for you? Do you have anything lined up?
I do. It's, oh gosh, I hope. There's something I've been working on for years and years with Shana Taub. It's a new project called Suffragist. And it's about the women's suffrage movement. And it's an all-female cast, all-female creative team. And it is one of the most moving pieces of theater I have ever been a part of. And I'm super, super excited. I'm not sure what's going to happen now and what the timeline is with it. But keep your ears to the ground, because it's going to be something special when it happens. I'm stoked about it.
Lee Silverman was on just a week or so ago telling us a little bit about it. So it sounds very exciting. And I met with the producer like a year ago, and I was like, I hear you're working on this thing with Shana Taub. I want in. And she was like, get in line, buddy.
Don't blame you. I want in. I've never wanted to put my money into something. I want to put my money into this.
Really? You seem like a person that you might get into the producing side or the business side. Is that just me making that up? Do you have a business mind about you?
I do, and it's only something that has grown throughout the years. You know what I mean? I have to now. Now I am my own business. I incorporated a couple years ago, and I'm learning more about the business side. And knowing producers like you and Sue and Randy and Rachel Sussman make me realize, oh, there are different ways to reach out mm-hmm. to people, and that money is energy, and that we can share that energy to create something, and it doesn't have to be all twisty mustache producer. You know what I mean? Like, there are other ways to do it, and you're a wonderful example of that. So, yeah, it does. People like you draw me into that particular world.
Well, I always say that, like, actors, performers can make the best producers because they're naturally such good salespeople. Uh-huh. They have so much passion for the art because they eat, sleep, and breathe it. They are the voice of it. So please come on board. Come on
right
board.
Right on, man.
Speaking of you being a business.
Okay. So there's a million challenges, and all of the challenges are the ones that everybody told you about, right? No one's ever said, oh, you're going to be an actor? Easy. Totally clear path. There's not going to be any worries at all. It's all of the rejection. It's finding a job that's going to support you. You got to find a support job first so that then you can put all your focus and energy into making yourself known. It takes a minute for people to get to know who you are and how you work. So you have to keep showing up at auditions and keep showing these producers, these directors and these casting directors, not only how prepared you are, but what your energy is, right? The only two things that actors have any control over is how prepared we are and our attitude. And those are both things that you can work on every single day. When you go into these auditions, you can have people whom you look up to, but you don't need to emulate anyone. Go in there and find your own voice. Trust that what you're selling is exactly right. Where you are in that day is exactly where you're supposed to be. There's nothing you should have on your resume. There's no note you should be able to hit. What you're presenting is exactly right. And the more you can trust that, the more the producers and the creative team will trust you. What they want to do is trust that if they give you this thing, you've got it. So you want to walk in there saying, I got it.
I mean, where were you when I was an actor? Because like maybe I should be doing it with that kind of brain. Actually, everyone is thankful that I gave that up. Just like you, I think. So I'm so thankful to you for spending this 30 minutes with us and warming some hearts, because you just did.
Thank you, Ken, for inviting me. I'll do anything. I'll follow you to the ends of the earth, brother. I believe in you so much.
Likewise. We will work together. That is,
of course, we will.
Making right now. I can't wait.
Right on, man.
All right. Take care, Jen. Have a great night.
Take care. Bye, loves. Right.
Thanks again for listening to this very special episode of the Producer's Perspective podcast, live from the pandemic. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, do us a favor and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And hey, while you're at it, leave us a big standing ovation review, will you? And check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/KenDavenport for more live stream interviews just like this one. Except on the Facebook page, you can actually see our faces. So check it out at facebook.com/KenDavenport. We'll see you there. We're getting the band back together.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.